Okay, thank you. Yes, as you said, I work in Palermo as a public prosecutor, and I work with several kinds of crimes, but especially I'm part of this special unit we created since 2013, which deals with smuggling of migrants and human trade, trafficking and human trade. And I just want to show you how we created the group, because it's very important to understand all the investigation that we invented our own protocol to investigate this kind of crimes. So this was the main case that led the public prosecution's offices of Palermo to create this group. On October 2013, an overcrowded fishing boat caught fire, capsized, and sank near the shore of an island near Sicily, which is called Lampedusa. This is just a map to show you how Lampedusa is near to the African coast, this little island that showed with the arrow. So it's so easy for them to get there. In this tragic event, 366 persons died. Mostly they were Eritreans and Somalis. Only 155 survived. Immediately after the landing of the boat, they caught the skipper, because the surviving migrants recognized him as the man who was driving actually the boat. Why is this investigation so important, and why it led to the creation of the group I told you about? Because this was apparently, at the beginning, a simple smuggling case, but it ended to involve a lot of trafficking issues also. So we launched the investigation, and the investigation... We created the special directorate I told you about, that is a special directorate because it's composed mixed by half ordinary public prosecutors and half by special mafia directorate prosecutors. And this is because trafficking crimes are, in our regulation, in our law, in our Italian law, regulated by the same mafia legislation. And this allows us, as prosecutors, to use all the investigation tools and methods that we use for mafia crimes, which are very, very powerful. So we use, on this kind of cases, the mafia case approach, which is based on a double-track system, the protective measures for the witnesses, the extensive use of wiretappings. It's very, very easy to have a wiretapping investigation in this kind of cases, when we have a mafia-related case. The investigative interviews with all the inmates, and the support of the Central Investigation Services of the Ministry of Interior. These are all the benefits we have treating this kind of crimes, like mafia crimes. This is the follow-up of the investigation, I will go very fast on this part because I want to arrive to the sexual exploitation part, which is the object of this seminar. But this was important to understand how we created the group. And these are some of the main issues in this kind of investigations. The absence of judicial police cooperation in the departure country. So we cannot count on any kind of contribution in our investigations. This is just one of the description of the kidnapping in this case. As I told you before, this appeared to be a simple smuggling case at the beginning, but it evolved in a real trafficking case, and this were their description of what they have been living before traveling to Italy, when they were kidnapped in the camps to begin the travel in Libya. And we have several of these kind of cases where the migrants, describe all this kind of concentration camp they have been living in Libya before getting on the boat and having the trip. We arrested, so not only the smuggler you saw before, but also the torturer they described as the one that kidnapped them in Libya before the trip. And recently he was convicted for 30 years of prison. This is just a slide that shows you the main route of the trafficking immigrants in human beings, which is never the southern countries of Europe, never Italy. It's really rare that they stay in Italy or they are led to the southern countries. It's always a northern country, Norway, Finland, as you can see. Portugal is almost never touched. And this is one of the interceptions we caught, also very important to understand how they are organized in this type of crimes. I told you before, we have very powerful instruments of wiretapping. One of these that we can do, and we always do in this kind of investigation, is to intercept also the conversations that are all made abroad. So imagine a Libyan conversation between Libyan persons. We can catch it if it touches an Italian connecting tower. We are able to catch it, and they are usable in court. This is the route I told you before: Finland, Sweden, Germany, never the southern countries. So the creation of this group, and now we're coming to our part, the object of this seminar, led the Palermo's investigators to schematically define some indicators to distinguish between smuggling and trafficking, which we already heard this morning. But I'll show you the one we detected during our experience. A more aggressive behavior of the traffickers, which exploits through the instrument of physical and psychological violence vulnerable people and act in different phases, as we saw: recruitment, management, intensive exploitation of persons being transported. For the temporal element, since in smuggling the relationship between the migrants and the criminal subject is generally exhausted in the time strictly necessary for the transport, while in the trafficking cases it does not have a predetermined duration and usually tends to be particularly long. Imagine the cases of debt in which the relationship is extinguished only with the return of the debt, the imaginary debt they think they have with the traffickers, or even it's undefined. It can last all their life. And the most important one, for the concern of the commodity in trafficking cases, the care that it arrives intact at its destination. This is why judicial experience shows that, on the contrary, smugglers often, when they catch their prize, they force the victims to take risky voyages that can also lead to death. And this is a very, very important indicator, because as we think that trafficking is a cruel crime, it's the most ferocious crime in respect of the smuggling crimes, this is not true, because if we want to count the deaths we have in this kind of investigation, the majority of the deaths comes from smuggling crimes, not from trafficking crimes. Because of this, because the traffickers take in concern the commodity of their object of trafficking, of the human beings they are transporting. So this is what we understood from the experience. Trafficking human beings, as we saw, can be finalized. I just cut the three major finalization. We saw there are many, many more in the past presentation: sexual exploitation, forced labor, domestic servitude, and organs trafficking. Aiming to distinguish each single case, we have collected some indicators which should help detecting a trafficking case. Why am I showing you how is it important to distinguish between smuggling and trafficking, and then to understand which kind of trafficking we have? Because it's important to decide what kind of investigation we have to conduct, we have to take on, because it differs a lot. So the sexual exploitation indicators: individual or group members subject the victims to acts of violence or threats to force them to submit to exploitation, also depriving them of passports. This is a very important indicator that, as I will show you soon, are we detecting every single case of trafficking. The victims do not have their identified documents, they do not have their passports, so they cannot escape and return to their origin country. People exploited are checked frequently, even through mobile phones, which they are provided with. Victims have to account all their income, in which the exploiters are siphoning off a significant extent, the majority extent, allowing them to send small sums to the families in order to prevent their rebellion. The exploited victims have no discretion regarding timetables and modalities of sexual performances. The victims are not free to decide whether, how, and when they return to their origin country. Any temporary return, apparently free, is determined and organized by the exploiters, by their exclusive interests, under their strict control, or under threat or retaliation in case of retention. When victims try to rebel, in some cases, they are threatened, sometimes relying on the children or on the family in the origin country, because in most of the cases, the family remains in the origin countries and they are taken alone in our countries. Even when not exercising violence or explicit threat, the group or the individual makes use of the criminal reputation achieved through violent means in the origin places. Other subjective indicators, it's the result of the objective indicators in the personal experience of the victims, the uprooting and isolation, no knowledge of the language spoken in the foreign country, the extreme poverty and suffering of the family members, the need, the perception, the misperception of the need to return the amount due. In most of the cases, we have the this that we call the debt bondage, servitude of debt. And in most of the cases, is based on the belief that they have to return the amount paid for the journey to Italy, or for the abortion that they had in their origin country, or, and we will see it because it's the most interesting element, the belief they are too strict to what they are asked because of the religious rights they have been compelled in their origin countries. So the cultural conditioning, for example, realized through juju rites, to terrorize the Nigerian woman or the Latin American women. In such cases, the psychological conditioning is accompanied by threats, otherwise intimidation, and also accompanied by the criminal reputation, as we saw, of the group in the origin countries. The failure of the immigration project, the belief that they cannot give up prostitution because of the social stigma that hangs over prostitutes. These are just some of the main issues we had to combat with at the beginning of this kind of investigation, and now we do not have any more. At the beginning, the witnesses, even if victims, were accused of illegal immigration because they entered our territory illegally, and now our Supreme Court in this decision of last year decided that they are not punishable for the attempt because the illegal entry in our territory is a misdemeanor, it's not a crime, so it's not punishable for the attempt. The need for the interpreters to translate all the different dialects spoken by these victims, which are very, very a lot. The prosecutability for the crimes committed abroad, and also in this case, as our Italian Supreme Court decided that we can investigate on these crimes with a reason that I'll show you later, but it's a really simple reason. Wiretapping, we talked about this. They are usable, and we use this technique I told you about before. That's called extradition technique. How to guarantee the presence of the witness until the celebration of the trial? How to guarantee it without violating the migrant's right? We also have touched this argument before in the past presentation I heard. And we do this with a preliminary trial hearing. So we hear them in front of a judge as soon as we can so that the proof is crystallized and it's good to be used during the trial. Obviously, we protect the victims also with the special Victims Act that we have regulated in our law. And the most important thing and the most difficult thing in this kind of case is to balance the public interest and the individual rights each time. This was the decision I was talking to you about our jurisdiction and how our court decided that we can investigate on this kind of crimes. It's a very simple argument. The court is just saying that because of they are rescued in international waters, but they wanted to arrive in Italy, we can investigate on them because the finalization of the action was to come in Italy. So that's where it would have been finalized if they had on their own arrived in Italy. This is an indictment I wrote in a trafficking sexual exploitation case I had recently. It was a Romanian family that took this Romanian girl that was pregnant and has had a little children with her in Italy with the promise of being a waitress or being a housekeeper, as always happens. And they paid for her abortion in Romania. And this was a case that had all the indicators we saw before. Her passport were kept away from the family, from the Romanian family. Her children, her daughter was kidnapped in the house while she was working for them, prostitution for them, all the day long. They paid for her abortion in her origin country. So she thought she had to return the money they paid for her. And this is coming to decision in a week, I think it's almost done. All the case was very, very interesting because at the end of the trial, one of the person of this Romanian family, the wife of the principal son, committing this kind of crimes, confessed everything. So she helped us a lot with this confession. This is an association indictment, which we always, most of the time, we do contest when there are three or more persons that are organized to commit this kind of crimes. And this allows us to use old mafia investigation tools I told you before, because when we contest one of these kind of crimes, we are able to use all the powerful instruments that we have in mafia crimes. These are other indictments in the same case. This was a case of a Nigerian woman, and in this case, there were forms of religious rights applied on them. This is my last operation in Italy. It's called Alisghetto because it comes from a concentration camp that is operating in Libya. We catch the traffickers because, as always happens in this kind of cases, when they see them in the refugee camps where they are in Italy, they recognize the traffickers and they are able to indicate them, to recognize them, and to declarate against them. They describe this place, so we have the arrest warrant for three of them, which are Fanti, Rambo, and at the end, Sophie. These are some of the migrants' interviews where they are describing this concentration camp where they have been kidnapped before having the travel to Italy. It's real cruel descriptions of what they were suffering. This is one of the photos they gave us. It's a photo that one of the traffickers made of one of the migrants to send it to their family to make them pay the amount to get free from this camp. This was a perfect kidnapping finalized to have the money in change of their freedom. And these are the three guys we have arrested recently. We already talked about this. One last thing I want to talk about you was the financial scenario that also is accompanied in this kind of investigation, because human smuggling is financed by the migrants' relatives and friends, mostly living abroad. And how do they finance for traffickers? How do they pay the traffickers? The most common method they use is the Hawala system. I think all of you have heard about it. It's a very ancient system, and I will show you what it consists. Another system is the money transfer service providers. The two systems are very, very difficult to track. They are very, very difficult to understand because they are based, the Hawala more than the other. They are based on ancient systems of money transfers. And so it's very difficult to us to catch them. When we do it because we find an Hawala broker. And how do we find an Hawala broker? Most of the time with the confessions of some of the criminals, so with the contribution of the collaborators of justice. This is just some of the information we get from our financial information unit that helps us to detect the money and the transfers of the money. But I repeat, in the modern techniques of investigation, of financial investigation, are in most of the case useful in this kind of cases because of the ancient technique they use. And these are questions we will never know the answers if they are laundered through the Italian financial system, the profits of this kind of crimes, and if they move from Italy to abroad. This was an operation that led at the end to a seizure of a big amount of money, Glaco 3 operation. And as I said, I arrived to the part we want to talk about. As I said, we found one of the Hawala broker in a shop in Rome near the railway station because of a collaborator of justice that told us that there was an Hawala broker. And so the police made an important seizure of cash of 526,000 euros in this case. As I said, the Hawala system is the most important to achieve knowledge about. Because it's based, I'll show you the slide that's easy to understand. It's based on the trust between two brokers that are located in different countries, in the origin country and in Italy. We suppose we are investigating in Italy. So we have standard that gives Hawala broker A the money to be transferred to a beneficiary. Then we have the Hawala broker A that contacts the Hawala broker B by phone or whatever and tells him the amount to pay to the beneficiary. They also establish a passcode associated with the transaction. Then we have the broker A that gives the passcode to the sender and tells him where the broker B is located. The sender gives the passcode to the beneficiary and tells him where to pick up the money. So neither they will ever see the beneficiary and the broker A. They will just change the money, transfer the money. The beneficiary at last gives the passcode to broker B and picks up the money. So it's all based on the trust. And why is it so difficult to track? Because the return of the money that they gave to the beneficiary, the broker B gave to beneficiary, will not happen in an immediate consequence of this transfer. It will happen after a year, after 2 years. So we will never know if the broker A had the money returned back and from who. We have different typologies of confiscation in Italy to attack the criminal assets when we find it. So I said it's so difficult to find, but when we do find it, we can use different kind of confiscation. The ordinary one you all have of profits, products and costs of the crime. The expanded confiscation that we use when we cannot find that direct price, product and cost of the crime. So in these cases, what we can do is to confiscate the similar amount we found in their patrimony for the equivalent extent. If we found something in their patrimony, it's always the question. Then we have preventive measures that we do not use in these kind of cases. These are the photos of the seizure we talked about before in Gulacro 3 operation in the shops in Rome. And this was the indictment in this kind of case, because also the indictment is difficult, because why are they punishable for this Hawala system, money laundering system? We thought we could punish them for the illegal brokerage they had been doing with this system, but also the indictment is really hard to prove in trial. I put this sentence, it's a Falcone sentence, at the end of this economical scenario analysis, because he used to say one of the main reasons of the exceptional danger of the organized crime is their wealth, but at the same time, the richness is their real Achilles heel, because big money movements leave behind big trails. Follow the tracks and you will find Cosa Nostra, Falcone used to say. I don't think this is very useful in this kind of investigations, because of the aspect I was speaking about before. Because of the ancient kind of techniques they use, we cannot think we can investigate on them with the new tools we are used to use in the economical investigation. They are no longer useful in this kind of investigation. The last slide, and then I'll try to end. Maybe I'm not seeing the hour. Maybe I'm already late. One of the last things I want to talk about was the attention we have recently put on the psychological assistance of this kind of witnesses, of this kind of victims. As I said before, most of the women involved in the sexual exploitation cases have been compelled in their origin country with religious rights, voodoo rights and juju rights. And these rights enforce them to stick to what they are told to do in Italy, and they feel they cannot escape from the right. They feel that if they do, in their family, in the origin country, something terrible will happen, their children will die, etc., etc. So what we are trying to do in this kind of cases, on one hand to help them, so to give them assistance, and on the other hand to have good proofs to take to court, reliable declaration to take to court. What we are trying to do is to give a specific assignments to psychological expertise. Best if they come from the community of origin of the victims, so if they are members of the community of the victims, that try to undo the rights on the victims. It's a psychological assignment, and we have done it in two cases till now. We are trying to undo the psychological effect of the religious rights, so they can feel free to to tell us whatever they want, and they can feel free to escape from the torturers and from their traffickers. If we see both this side and the economical side we've talked about together, so if we put them together as a system, the ancient ways to compel psychologically the victims they use, the awala, the voodoo and the juju, the rites, the religious rites, and on the other hand, we see how ancient techniques they use for money movements and economical transfers. What I think we should rather do is not really a step forward in improving our technical investigation and our abilities to investigate, but maybe we should step backwards and try to understand a so ancient method of subjection they use and of acting they use in this kind of crimes. So this was my last slide, and this is just the thank you slide.